the players were first and foremost in the thought of the league. And I give them credit for that because y'all know me now.
Right.
Y'all don't watch me. I don't sugarcoat.
Nope.
Right? Like, if it was messed up, I was going to say it was messed up. I would have wanted to use another word, but I would say it's messed up.
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. My name is Deontay Epps, joined by Dane Beasley. And Dane, we are in line with another guest, man. This guy has blown up over the last few years on the internet, on TV, past NFL star, defensive lineman, Marcus Spears, my guy. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me, bro. It's some beautiful weather up here in Northern Virginia. So with the family, we just chilling. I'm in my happy place when I'm with my people.
Ain't that the best feeling, just chilling with your family, enjoying the time with them, especially with everything that's going on over the past year or so, and even longer than that, but I'm right there with you, man. I enjoy
absolutely
that time.
Bro, the pandemic for us, man, was a godsend. I have been grinding and working so hard and on the road so much. And not to take away from the devastation, but for me personally, it was an opportunity for me to be in tune with my family, like see my wife day to day, see my kids day to day, and really like, it's funny, man, as when you're a father and you're working hard, you really don't know what the home life is really like. But it's allowed me to really understand the job that my wife is doing.
Right.
And I have a greater appreciation. Yeah, no doubt. I got a greater appreciation for the work she's putting in with our kids, man, when I'm out there working and grinding.
Already appreciate it. Yeah, I feel you on that one. We just going to step back a little bit, Coach. Back into your career before we get into it, man. You're from Baton Rouge, man. So it was kind of destined for you to go to LSU. Am I right?
Well, most people would think that. It's funny, man. My mom and dad went to Southern University, the HBCU in Baton Rouge. And I went to Southern University Lab School, which is a laboratory school that's a feeder for teachers and stuff like that from Southern University to come teach and then whatever they decide to do. So my goal was to always be on the yard, what they call Southern campus. I wanted to, that was my culture though. I was there in high school. I grew up going to their football games. Eric Randall was my coach in high school and he started at Southern as a quarterback. So everything that I knew was Southern University. And then, you know, the football thing started happening in high school, and this little short dude named Nick Saban walked in the living room, and everything changed, man. And it was, but you know, unbeknownst to a lot of people, LSU was not in the cards. If you think about all of the guys from Louisiana with big names, Florida schools were the schools we were going to. It was Florida State with Warrick Dunn and Travis Minor. It was Ed Reed at Miami. It was so many dudes leaving and playing at these prominent, you know, colleges. They were already on. When we decided to go to LSU, and I say we because that class was full of dudes from Louisiana, LSU wasn't popping like
that. Right.
LSU came and got a dude that was destined for the HBCU to come in, and we the guys that deliver championships.
You mentioned Nick Saban. How is that like, him being in your living room trying to recruit you?
It's a lot. And I think the thing that I respected about him was just the honesty. Like, it was clear. I told him my goals are clear. My mom wants me to get a degree. I want to go to the league. And I knew that. I knew financially. I knew what I was trying to get my family to. And it just felt like the right thing. And the thing that he was teaching was competition. He was talking about getting you prepared for life, let alone going pro. And it just resonated. Like, the other coaches made good pitches. Bobby Bowden made a good pitch. All of them. A lot of guys. R.C. Slocum from Texas A&M it was a bunch. I had all the coaches there, man. And every one of them, you know, were recruiting at a very high level. It's just something just sat in my spirit with Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. My mom felt good about it, which y'all know is huge. And it was, it just felt right at that time. It felt right. I felt like it was his experience of being in the league, his experience of dealing with a lot of guys with a lot of talent and understanding how to cultivate that and get guys to a point where they could actually be pros and thrive once they got to the pros. All of that resonated with me. And then LSU was dope. Like, I had a bunch of friends that eventually ended up going there, a bunch of people that I respected, spoke highly of it. And it all worked out, man. So when he sat in my living room, I did not know the Nick Saban that everybody knows now.
Right.
He was 2 years removed from Michigan State. So it, like, saying Nick Saban name now, as opposed to saying it in 2001 is a lot different.
Right.
In living room. So it was, but you could tell he was on to something, man. And I wanted to be a part of that.
That I can only imagine, man. So, you know, everybody calls you Big Swagoo, man. When I told a couple of my family, like, I was like, man, I think we get Marcus Spears on. Man, it was like, man, ask him, how did that nickname come to be?
Well, so a lot of people don't know, man. I was working for ESPN previous, but I was working for SEC Network.
Okay.
Which covered the Southeastern Conference. And my first year there, Joe Tessitore was our host on the show called SEC Nation. And Joe gave me that, man. He was like, look, I take pride in how I look. Because if a big dude get on TV, it look way worse than when most dudes get on TV.
Gotta be fresh.
Gotta be fresh. That was key. That's been key for a long time. And he was like, man, you dripping swagoo. And I was like, what? And he was like, I'm going to call you the Big Swagoo from now on. And dude, Joe Tess started calling me that. And then I noticed when I was making appearances on SportsCenter, they'll say Marcus Spears, the Big Swagoo after that. And I was like, man, this thing is taking off.
Yeah.
Like it formed a life of its own. And I'm telling you, man, like, you know when you got the right one, because now people refer to you as that in public. Like when I'm placing, man, Swagoo, what's up, man? So it just became a thing, man. And I embraced it. It separated me from, you know, just the normal guy
right at
ESPN. And it's something that, you know, I nickname everybody because I don't do well remembering names. And I think when you have a nickname, people can kind of like associate that, right? Like that becomes a part of your persona as long as it's the right one.
Yeah, exactly.
It ended up working out, man. And that's what people refer to me. And I take no shade because the origin of it is the big fella being clean.
Right, exactly. That's awesome, man.
That's cool. So you put together some pretty amazing seasons in the early 2000s and eventually led to you being drafted by the Dallas Cowboys in 2005. So take us through that. Like, was this type of a dream situation to get drafted by America's team? Or was this a situation where, like, you're divided, maybe possibly wanted to go to the New Orleans Saints? Or how did that play out? Because being from Louisiana and all.
Brother, I was just trying to get to that bag. It ain't matter.
Yeah.
It could have been a team in London, South Africa. It could have been anywhere, man. My goal was to take care of my family, right? And you know, going into that process, like you don't have any power unless you're the Mannings and you Eli, and you say, I don't want to play there. you know, you get an idea of where you slide it. So I kind of had an idea. Dallas was in those numbers of draft picks in the first round where I could still be available. Initially, I thought I was going to the Texans. I thought it was going to be Houston. I had a lot of communication with them. Rick Smith was their GM. Talked to them a number of times. They were converting over to a 3-4 defense. So they were trying to build that out. And they ended up taking Travis Johnson from Florida State. And then when Dallas came up at 20, I knew it. Like, I just knew it. And my mom was like, you going to Dallas.
Mama knows.
And when the phone rang, it was Jerry. And he said, congratulations. we're about to take you with the 20th pick. Are you excited to be a Cowboy? I was like, hell yeah. and then he put Bill Parcells on the phone, and Parcells was like, I need you to show up 3:10. I'll see you when you get to camp. And that was it.
Yeah. Straight to the point.
Like, yep. I was like, okay, this real life now. Like all of the excitement about the draft and being drafted is over.
In,
now
right it's
work. Yeah. The real stuff.
But yeah, man, playing there was amazing, bro. Amazing. Texas is my second home. I was so fortunate too to be drafted with DeMarcus Ware and Chris Canty and Jay Ratliff. We had a great class, Marion Barber. It was just, we were a tight-knit group that came in with some veterans like Leroy Glover and Greg Ellis that really was wanted us to thrive and have success. And I think that translated, man. And I give a lot of credit to not only the guys that I came in the draft with, but the guys that were already in Dallas for the longevity of my career and really helping me understand fast what it meant to be a pro.
Right, right. Yeah. And to piggyback off your answer right there, kind of segues into my next question. You know, you had a stellar career in the league, and, you know, there's a lot of NFL players, you know, it comes to a time, obviously, where you got to hang the cleats up.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of players that, you know, football is all that they know. Mm-hmm. And so transitioning from that career to, okay, what am I going to do next? What was that switch for you that was like, okay, my career is done. I want to be an analyst. I want to be in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Like, what was that switch for you? Like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to pursue it.
As crazy as it sounds, man, it never was a switch. Because I tell people all the time, I didn't bet on going to the league. Like, going to the NFL to me was a fantasy. Like, and it took... You got to have luck, bro. Everybody think, I mean, I'm sure y'all know. Y'all know great athletes that never made it. Y'all know guys that hit circumstances that derailed them from getting to the point of making it to the pros. So my plan was to always, I studied communications in college. I was always, my mama always taught me growing up, you better be able to speak well. Like, she thought that was a quality that I needed. She was a telephone operator for 25 years. So it was, communication was always one of my strong suits. I wasn't crazy about school. I ain't love it. I did it because it led to me being able to be eligible and play. And I knew I had to have an education, man, period. But my whole goal was to have some type of interaction. It wasn't to be on ESPN. It wasn't to be a star, a famous, quote unquote. It was always just to impact people. I wanted to do that through conversations. And this is the road, you know, playing for the Cowboys absolutely helped. It was a media frenzy. And I got a chance to meet a lot of people in this industry. And then realizing, like, yo, I can really, like, do this. Yeah. My sister called me, man. It was funny. I was going to do radio in Dallas. I was lined up to do a radio show in Dallas. That was going to be my after football theme. Mm-hmm. And my sister hit me and was like, have you heard about the SEC network? And I was like, yeah, we argue all the time about, you know, schools being better and all right. that. And she was like, you need to apply. She said, apply, bro. That's how much we didn't know about getting a job in media. And so I reached out, man. I literally got this job through a tweet. And one, my boss still to this day, Stephanie Drooley, tells everybody, when Marcus tells this story, make sure you don't think you can tweet me and get a job. But it was, I tweeted a man and I told her to hit me back, and she direct messaged me. And I was like, I want to audition for a spot at the SEC network. And eventually that turned into some communication between me and her. And I found myself in Bristol auditioning. And I didn't hear anything after that first audition. I got a call about 2 weeks later to do another one. And she was able to be at the second one in Austin at the Longhorn Network, which she launched as well. And then, man, we did that interview. I was there with Booger McFarlane. Me and Booger was there together. And they called me about a week and a half later and told me that I got the job. I got the position. I didn't know what the position was. I just knew I was about to be on TV. So I was lit. I was like, I'm about to go on it. And then it became a 2-hour live show. And I called Stephanie when they decided to put me on SEC Nation. And I was like, yo, I've never done live TV before. She was like, just be yourself. We'll take care of the rest. And man, it was I'm where I'm supposed to be. And it still holds true in my life. It's the community. It's the people around me realizing sometimes what's better for me than I realized was for myself. And obviously it has turned into this, which is a young career, man, but it's still so much I want to do, so much I want to accomplish. But I tell people, man, the foundation of when you see me on television, I love what I'm doing and I'm having a good time.
And that's all.
And I hope that resonates. I hope that resonates.
Man, who's your favorite personality to go back and forth with on the shows?
Brian Clark. My Louisiana brother. We don't get to debate. I love debating Stephen A. and Max.
Of course.
They masters at their craft, man. They know so much about just sports and life and subject matter. Both of them have served as mentors of mine. Man, listen, I'm still having moments, bro, where I'm pinching myself. I'm still having those moments. Like, I'm still, you know, I was on First Take. I used to watch First Take when I was in the league. I used to be like, man, I'll go on that show and dominate Stephen A. at that time, Skip. You know, when those moments were happening, man, it was surreal, bro. And I'm still to this day, like when I work with Jay Harris, who is an anchor at SportsCenter, I still pinch myself. I'm like, man, that's Jay. Like, Jay worked with Stu Scott before. And when I'm on with Greeny, and I'm like, that's Mike and Mike. Like, from that recollection, when I did His and Hers with Jamel and Michael Smith, I'm like, that's Jamel Hill and Michael Smith. So I've had a bunch of those moments, man. And it's still exciting. It still makes me smile, and it's still humbling to be able to be in that arena with who I consider giants in that space, man.
That's huge. That is very ironic that you mentioned the great Stewie Scott, man, because we growing up, Deontay and I, we're 90s babies. So it's, you know, that was one of the guys that we saw on TV. It's like, that guy looks just like us.
Absolutely.
So like in your eyes, do you consider yourself as a role model or form of representation for a lot of Black kids across America and just the culture itself?
Absolutely, man. I mean, we have that responsibility. Anytime we have a platform, especially on the scope that I've been blessed to have, man, people watching, you know, kids are determining dreams based off what they see you do. I was like that. Reggie White was that guy for me. You know, it was guys. It was Jerry Rice. It was Reggie White. It was my high school basketball coach that I wanted to emulate. I was like, these dudes doing it the way I would want to do it. And obviously you put your teaching and your spin on it. With your family values and all of those things. But yes, man, that's the ultimate responsibility. I got an 11-year-old son. I know how impressionable they are. You know, I know when LeBron or Steph does something, it they want to do it. You know what I'm saying? So being that representation and being like we need to see faces like ours, like in these arenas, you know, to say I can do it, right? Like when I saw Stu, for the first time, and when I saw him using slang and words and talking in the vernacular that I understood, I was like, I can be on TV, you know? So we need that, man. So for me to be in a position where some kids and young men, young women, and really all races, but especially young black men and black women to say I can be on ESPN and I can be myself, and have success is super important. And I don't take that lightly, man, because I understand, like, there's a responsibility that comes when that red light on that camera comes on and everybody see you across the world, man.
That's good. So speaking of across the world, you have Louisiana roots. So I have a very serious question about you. What kind of fishing do you do? What kind of fish? I know you fish. What kind of fishing do
we
you do?
I grew up calling them sackalay, which is crappie. Most of the country know it as crappie, like crappie, whatever you want to call it. But white perch, some people call it. But that's my thing, man. Pat, I want to catch crappie every day of my life. I think about it every day. Me and my son, we fish and hunt together. But that fishing, catfishing, anything in the bayou that you can cook pretty much was what we fish. Brim, like, man, yeah. So if I had one fish in fresh water that I wanted to catch, it'd be sackalay, which is crappy to everybody that ain't from Louisiana.
Yeah, people would be like, what? They're
going to
Google that.
Like, yeah. What's going on? Never heard of that before.
Oh man. Hey, couple of NFL questions, man. And we'll let you go because I know you're doing family things, but once again, we appreciate you so much for coming on with us during this time, man. Obviously everything has been crazy with sports the past year or so with COVID and stuff. How do you think the NFL handled the COVID situation? Had a few hiccups, but they started and they got a Super Bowl winner.
Yep. I thought they did a phenomenal job. We all operated with the idea that we would have COVID breakouts, that people would get COVID. And I don't think they ever took it lightly. The idea of the NFL has always been we above the fray, right? Like anything that's going on in real life, we can still go play football games and do and conduct our business as usual. And it doesn't impact how people see the league or think about the league. Man, being there every day and getting the information about what these guys were doing, the protocols that these teams put in place, the leadership in the NFL, which since Cap hasn't been popular to talk about, right? Like let's be real about it. Like since Colin went through what he went through dealing with the league, I looked at the league different. I was like, yeah. So dealing with this COVID issue, the great thing about professional sports is you have a structure where the players they choose through collective bargaining, through negotiations. So the players decided we're going to play. And then the league decided we're going to put games on. How do we do that? And I thought they did a phenomenal job through communication, the way they set up each team's facility, checking guys, getting tested, and really when it did hit, it hit the Titans. If y'all remember, I think it hit Denver. Denver played with a guy that didn't even play quarterback.
Yep. I'm a Broncos fan, so you know I was feeling that. Yeah.
So it was those type of situations are the ones that were hard. Right. Those were hard, right? Because you like, man, cancel the game, play it later, postpone it, which they did a couple of them. But when I tell you, I believe Troy Vincent, the vice president, and one of my boys, Stephen Boyle, who works in the NFL office, the players were first and foremost in the thought of the league. And I give them credit for that because y'all know me now.
Right.
Y'all don't watch me. I don't sugarcoat.
Nope.
Right? Like, if it was messed up, I was going to say it was messed up. I would have wanted to use another word, but I would say it's messed up. But I got to give them credit, man. I thought they did everything they possibly could to ensure the safety of these players first and to get a season done. And the social justice initiative that they came around on, which I ain't giving them all the credit for that.
Yeah, I understand.
You know what I'm saying? But those players, man, they stood 10 toes down and they got it done. And that's really who the credit goes to. But the league deserves some credit for listening to those guys and putting in action what they thought would be best to get through a season and make sure everybody got through that season. So I thought they did a phenomenal job.
Mr. Marcus Spears. So speaking of taking action.
And mind you, Dane's a Cowboy fan, so you know.
I'm a Cowboys fan. I'll correct that. As of recently, a hopeless Cowboys fan. But with the recent signing of the Dak Prescott, it's like a giant weight has been lifted off of most of our backs who are Cowboys fans. But of course, you have your naysayers and those who enjoy the sport of pocket watching and don't agree with, you know, paying a quarterback this much or, you know, not understanding how the quarterback market works.
Yeah.
What do you have to say to other people, maybe fans, maybe I guess you can say they're fans, but they're not really fans of the Dallas Cowboys. But what do you have to say to those kind of people that have those type of attitudes and negative things to say about players that get paid when, you know, rightfully so, working on a rookie contract, you finally get your payday?
One thing I'm going to teach you guys in this moment, because that's a great question. So if you could make $160 million, you would too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So listen, man, my skin has hardened playing for the Cowboys and doing my job now. So like you all the time, I tell people this all the time, man, when you get hate from other people, ask yourself, if they was in this situation, would they do what you do? And majority of the time, you've responded how most people would respond.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when Dak going through this contract situation, as a fan, and I did both sides. I don't know if y'all saw it, but I did both sides. As an analyst, I was like, Dak need to get the hell out of there. Right? This is not a good situation. 3 years waiting for a contract. As a fan, I was like, Lord, please let Dak resign. Because I think he's a really good football player, and I think he's a quarterback that's still getting better. But when you have people that's naysayers, man, and when you, I'm sure y'all gonna have them with this podcast, y'all gonna have them in y'all everyday life. Man, do you stay true to you? All that other stuff is outside noise. It's just like when I talk to people about the Dallas Cowboys. Ain't but one team win the Super Bowl every year. So all of those other people that's hating on the Cowboys, they team ain't win either. You know, so the king of the hill right now is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Other 31 teams can shut the hell up and just enjoy being fans and arguing about their team being better and all of that stuff. But, man, I just – like when it come to that type of stuff, real raw, and give people the 100% truth on how I'm feeling about it and my opinion. And that's the thing that I try to delineate between people. I'm not a reporter. I'm paid to give an opinion when the story comes out. That's a whole different job. So I take things for what they are. The way my mama and daddy raised me and my family raised me, be straight to the point. You don't need to beat around the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I operated in the whole Dak saga and situation. I was like, this is what Dak need to do, because this is what I would have done.
160 million reasons why I would do it too.
Yeah. 160 million reasons, bro. And two, man, to that point, when we were having all of that conversation about what is Dak worth and all of that, you are worth whatever a team is willing to pay you.
Yeah.
And you know, the big reason for me on the Dak situation is everybody, I had got past the point of Dak being a Cowboy. Like, I root for players.
Yeah.
Like, I root for players, man. When it's time to get paid, go get your bag and get the biggest one you can get. I know what this league do. I was just getting up off the sofa and my daughter was like, Dad, why your knees crack like that? Right? Like, so I know what this game do to your body, and I know how hard it is mentally. I know what type of toll it takes on your family and your friends, and it's a job. And people, like, you know, fans look at it from a perspective of it's a game and these guys having fun, and, you know, you shouldn't be making that money to play a game. Well, come do it. Come practice with us one time.
Exactly. Right?
Come play in the game one time. And then after that, you determine how easy and much of a game and how fun it is. And I'm not, look, I don't want no sympathy from anybody from playing in the league. But we also going to tell the truth about how hard it is, along with the perks that comes along with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Situation always changes when you tell somebody to go ahead and take a slant right across the middle. No. Exactly. Okay.
We gonna line Ray Lewis up right here, and you run straight to him and trying to catch the ball at the same time.
And if you get past Ray, we got Ed Reed right there, right behind him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah. Let's not get it twisted and think that everybody just out there running on a bed of rose petals.
Yeah.
No, that's right. Okay. So, based on the offseason that we've had so far, what do you think has been the most impactful move or have the most impact overall when it's all said and done after this season wraps up?
I think Matt Stafford going to the Rams. Matt Stafford is a hell of a quarterback that's been buried in Detroit and not really in the conversation of being a top 10 guy because Detroit hadn't won anything. Him, Sean McVay, the talent of a young running back in Cam Akers, and they still got Malcolm. You still got Cooper Kupp. I'm talking about
just signed Deshaun Jackson too.
Right. Yeah. Right. Deshaun just signed with him. So you got a guy to take the top off of a defense. And that signing is an indication of what they think about Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford been bombs away his whole career. So now we got a guy that can take the top off of a defense. McVay loves to dominate you in game plans. And then you got them two animals over there on the other side of the ball to support you better than any other team player can support you in the league. Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. So, look, man. I think Matt Stafford and the Rams will be in the NFC Championship this year, and a viable, legit Super Bowl contender based on what they built. Now, they got to fix some things on their offensive line. Andrew Whitworth got to come back and make sure he's healthy, who I played with at LSU, so I'm hoping so. But I think that move can send a ripple effect through the league. You know, we love Cam in our community, and we can make excuses for him. Yeah. Cam looked like trash last year, right? But we also got to know what he was working with. Mm-hmm. We got to know the weapons he had. We got to understand he went through COVID.
And the
he
time. Didn't have an off season, an off season.
Learning a new system under Josh McDaniels. So I believe that the New England Patriots will be right back in the AFC East title race and vying for to get into the playoffs. And Bill Belichick with a good football team in the playoffs, y'all already know.
Yeah, everybody we'll got
hey, you think – when Bill saw Tom Brady hosting up another trophy, he was like, yeah, let's make some
like,
absolutely.
Yeah. All right,
then.
Yeah,
all right. Everybody going to think it was just you now. Yeah. But let me go ahead. And bro, how active they were in free agency, it lets you know the type of mentality Belichick has. Like, and he said it about Tom as well. He said, man, I exhausted all of our resources to get these Super Bowls. So, when they didn't have money to spend and when they didn't have a roster that looked like a good enough roster to compete, he was being honest. Like, man, for the last 5 years, I was investing in what we had and I got three Super Bowls out of that. Right. We'll take one in Dallas.
Yeah. Lord knows we will.
We'll take one. So what he did in this offseason was signing all of these guys, identifying the deficiencies and the issues that they had. It just lets you know why people consider Bill Belichick the greatest to ever do it.
Marcus, man, we are very much appreciative, my guy. It's been a long couple of months. I was, and I'm gonna email Ashley after this, but she's been great because I'm hounding her like every 2 weeks. I'm like, hey, is he good? What about this time? But man, we really appreciate you coming on with this, man, and. Every time we have a guest, we always like to give them the opportunity to shout out anything, any closing words, any people or anybody or any message that you want to give out to our fans and audience.
Man, look, blessing. First of all, blessings to y'all, bro. I appreciate y'all having me, man. One thing I tell people, you know, and I'm sorry we had to keep bumping it. Work story kept getting in the way.
Of course.
My mom taught me humility, bro. Don't never get to a spot where you can't reach back. Don't ever get to a spot where you feel like you're too big to do something. And that's my message to the youth, man. Like, you ain't more than anybody because your bank account say this, or your shoes this designer, or you wearing these type of clothes. Everybody else is trying to make it. Treat them that way. And that will be my message, man. And show love. Like, show love. Like, because I'm pouring into you doesn't mean I'm losing anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, me pouring into you is to want to see you do well and do best. I don't have to have a mentality and you know, the old crab in the barrel that people associate to our culture and our generations of Black people. It's time. We moving on from that.
Yeah.
Everybody can eat. The whole family can eat.
Right.
The friends can eat. The community, the neighborhood can eat if we do it with the right type of spirit and the right approach. So that's my message, man. Everybody can eat. Me giving away the knowledge and the finances and the nuggets and the jewels that I have doesn't mean you taking them from me. It just means I'm trying to give you what I have so you can ascend in whatever area you want.
Couldn't said it better, man. Appreciate you so much.
Yes,
listeners,
sir.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. You can listen on any platform, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, all the other platforms. And also you can check out our website, www.theduosportsandstuffpodcast.com. Peace.
Respect.